You're listening to Moving On With Pain, the podcast. My name is Dr. Morten Høy, and I'm your host. This podcast is presented by the Danish Society for Pain and Physical Therapy, a not-for-profit organization that is focusing on providing access to high-quality pain-related content for our members and everyone else with a clinical interest in pain and science.
Hi there, my name is Morten, and I'll be your host on this podcast. The following interview was recorded live at the European Pain Congress in Budapest in September of 2023. You can find the videos with all the interviews on YouTube if you go find EFIC, so that's the European Pain Federation on YouTube. You can find the videos there and have them online, or you can, of course, listen to it here. I hope you'll enjoy the interview. Have you ever wondered how you make a conference? I guess if you listen to this podcast, you would have at some point been to a conference. But what we're going to talk about here is how to create it, or actually, why is it so important? Who built it? The 13th European Congress on Pain was directed, or the scientific committee was directed, by our speaker in this podcast. We talk about how her background has formed the insights and the program on the conference, and especially what she recommended in the program. You can also watch the video online if you go to YouTube and find EFIC's channel there. So welcome back. We are still here in Budapest at the EFIC studio, the EFIC TV studio. My name is Morten Høy. I'm an associate professor at Aalborg University. And I have the great pleasure of being in the studio now with Professor Eska Bogatskitsan. Does that seemly right?
No, that's perfect. Morten, thank you so much.
Yeah, we've been rehearsing this before we went live because I think it's so difficult to pronounce it. Anyways, Esther, you are here for many reasons. The primary reason that you are in this chair right now is because you were chairing what we know as the scientific committee. So you've been building the program that everyone here is buying to attend, essentially. But before we go into that, you are a professor of anesthesiology and pain medicine.
That's right.
At the University of Münster in Germany, obviously.
Yep.
And would you mind telling us a little bit about your background?
Yep. So, long time ago, 25 years or so, I was trained as an anesthesiologist, as you say. And I went into anesthesia because I was very interested in pain already. And that was something that was not common at that time, neither in anesthesia nor in other specialties.
So I guess this is one of the things that maybe if you are not in the pain research area, you'll be wondering why is pain not a thing? But so you can be anesthetizing people, obviously, when you know before surgery, for instance. But anesthetists have been working along with neurologists and other rheumatologists with people who have pain, but dealing with more the diseases, perhaps. Is that true to say?
So, yeah. So it's surprising on one hand, and it's not surprising on the other hand. On one hand, as you said, there are many disciplines dealing with pain. And these pains are somehow different. So a neurologist takes care of certain patients with neuropathic pain, and an anesthesiologist primarily takes care of patients after surgery or even during surgery that they don't suffer from pain due to the surgical procedure. So these are different aspects that need to be addressed differently up to the point where we treat it. So this is already inherent in the specialty. However, that means that there is no common specialty. For example, in our country and in many other European countries, there is no specialty for pain in general. So you have to be an anesthesiologist or a neurologist or an orthopedic specialist to add on a pain specialty. On the other hand, we think this makes sense in a way that if you want to treat patients, for example, in a multidisciplinary pain clinic, that you know not just about pain, but you know about other aspects as well. For example, about neurological diseases that sometimes lead to pain, sometimes not. So I think it has an advantage that people has another discipline and add on this discipline a pain specialty. On the other hand, they are they treat patients multidisciplinary.
And I guess in all fairness, you could say that in the acute setting, like in post-surgical pain, knowing about anesthesia is obviously going to help you, because there's a very close link between what goes on in the nervous system,
yep,
and the pain that people experience.
You could think that.
Well, you would think
and
that.
It is already 25 years ago, this was exactly the way. Today we know that approximately 10 to 15% of patients develop chronic pain, and half of them develop neuropathic chronic pain. So here you see the link is much closer than we thought 30 years ago. So I think, and this is what EFIC is about, they try to bring people together from many disciplines, or even nurses, physiotherapists, physicians, and many other disciplines, and these come together with their specialty, talking about pain, treating patients from their point of view. And this is what pain medicine is about.
Yeah, so that's quite different, actually.
It is.
It's not so instrumental as it used to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. So coming back to your background, so you're doing what we know as translational research. Before we go into that, so you did your thesis in Germany.
Yes.
And then you went on to the United States?
Yeah, so I did a thesis in the anesthesia department related to post-surgical pain.
Yeah, so already 25 years ago, post-surgical pain was close to your heart.
Yeah, so and that was already my interest. But I thought here in Germany, it's not that common to study pain. So I went to the States for a postdoc position. It was planned for 2 years. It turned out to be 5 years in two different areas of pain, two different techniques, or even more techniques I learned. I looked into pain science in different laboratories. So that
if you're not a basic researcher, then I remember before I did basic research, people were talking about a technique or a paradigm, and you're like, what is that really? So could you explain to me, what is a paradigm, what is a model, what is a technique that you learned, for instance, when you were at Johns Hopkins?
So at Johns Hopkins, I learned electrophysiological techniques, like recording for nerve fibers in basically animals. That was at the time the most convincing aspect of getting ideas about how nerves function,
yeah,
and how nerves dysfunction after a disease, under neuropathic conditions and so on. Even under normal conditions, we didn't know how a nerve is really conducting nociceptive input to the central nervous system. So I learned how to record from single nerve fibers and how to use techniques to learn more about the function of the nervous system.
And even, I mean, that's technical enough. But I guess the tricky bit here is to know that if you don't know your techniques, if you can't reproduce
exactly
it, then the results you are showing in your research is going to be too variable or maybe too questionable.
Yep.
So you really need to be a good, you know,
yep,
person who uses your hands very well. Or,
yep,
you know, you're a technician, yep, basically.
Exactly. And this was very interesting. So I have been basically in two laboratories. The first one was a very small laboratory in the anesthesia department, very close to the physiological department, so we worked closely together, learning different kinds of techniques. And I was so happy that I was starting in the morning with doing stuff a technician is doing, preparing everything, coming with my animal to the laboratory, doing everything myself until the end of the day. And this helped me a lot and was probably the best learning process to set up my own laboratory in Germany. There was nothing basically at home. In fact, that's not totally true. There's another story behind, because I learned in the US, my husband, who is an anesthesiologist as well, and we together basically started the laboratory in Germany when I was back after 5 years. He was in the States for 3 years, not the same time as me. But so I was learning everything and not stopping at a time where I learned one or two techniques, starting to learn the third technique, the fourth technique, collaborating with other laboratories, learning to interpret data. I'm not myself gathering.
And essentially, you were building the skill set that is necessary to have your own laboratory back in Germany then.
Yep.
So your area of interest, as we alluded to before, is post-surgical pain, and there's a ton of ways you can study that, but what you have excelled in is this, what we call translational, so you do the animal studies, but then where's the human aspect of that?
So I was fortunate to develop with my PI in the US a model, an animal pain model.
And so when we say animals, we mean rodents here, right?
Yeah, mainly mice and rats.
Mice and rats, yeah.
So we developed a model that pictured post-surgical pain by doing an incision, doing muscle trauma, and under anesthesia to the animal wakes up, and we assessed pain-related behavior in the animal, and this was related to a surgical kind of injury.
So essentially, you're doing to the animal what we think we are doing to people during surgery.
Exactly. Yeah? And it was so surprising that we got different results from interventions than in other models. So the other models did not translate well to post-surgical pain, but our model did very well.
Oh, really?
So, and this was then, it was hard to convince people because many of the data were negative, and negative data are very difficult to publish. But the negative data showed that the model was different to other models, and when we got then positive data, they were different again.
And how was your model different?
So the model, for example, did not react to systemic administration or to intrathecal, so in directly to the spinal cord, ketamine, which is a drug that that changes some kind of transmission in the.
Yeah, so it blocks the NMDA receptor.
It blocks the NMDA receptor, and this did not change anything in these models, but it changed a lot in different other models.
And that's interesting because we thought that wind up, a sort of central sensitization, would be the leading cause of post-surgical pain.
Exactly.
And you tested that, and
we
it showed. That's your negative result.
That's our negative result.
So people were saying, we know why you have post-surgical pain, but your models told you we don't.
Yeah.
So where did you go from there?
So then we did many studies, for example, doing the electrophysiological assessments in these animals. We figured out that certain nerve fibers, not just the C fibers, which have been suggested to be the nociceptors, but the A delta fibers are very important for transmitting the pain sensation to the body, introducing central sensitization, which in fact, as you mentioned, is different than just wind up. Long-term sensitization. And then there have been studies in patients. One colleague of mine, Patricia Lavantome, at the same time was in the States, and she went back home earlier than me and did some clinical studies, and she showed exactly the same phenomenon in patients.
Yeah. So how did she do that? Because she couldn't cut up patients, I assume.
Well, she in fact did this in real patients after surgery, so they had an injury, and she showed that, for example, mechanical sensitization was around this incision.
Yeah.
We showed that in animals, and we again showed that similar drugs, in fact, systemic ketamine works. Yeah, the spinal ketamine didn't work, but systemic ketamine works to shrink down the sensitization process, not just for a small time period. And then we went further, and she did some stuff in the patients. I did some of the experiments, and even other laboratory used the animal model as well and showed different aspects of pathophysiological mechanisms. And then there came a human model in place. So when I came back to Germany, I set up, in addition to the animal model, I set up human pain models. And one model was doing a tiny, very tiny incision and human volunteers.
Yeah.
Ethically approved, certainly, and it's gone after a couple of days. But it's again mirrored what we saw in animals, and it mirrors what we see in patients.
Yeah.
But we do not have the variety of the patient parameters. We do not have the problems we have with many different patients. We have the human volunteer, and we can work with human volunteers. And this is translation from patients to human volunteers, back down translating to animals, the questions we find in humans and what we find in animals, trying to translate that back to patients.
So I guess what you're saying is, metaphorically, you could say that you are doing your one model and you're studying, let's say, the pain.
Yes.
And one model shows you an aspect of it, but
exactly.
there are likely many
exactly.
different aspects. So
exactly.
do you think that would be different models, so different incision models, or are we talking about completely different things like neuroimmune interactions, or what do you
yes.
think is the sort of next step in post-surgical pain?
So and, at the time I started that, there was no post-surgical pain model. So we started with a very easy one. Now, many people, including us, develop different kinds of post-surgical pain models. For example, thoracotomy. So having cancer surgery and having a thoracotomy for this cancer surgery produces in more than 50% of patients chronic pain afterwards. But the model, the small animal model we did, and it's in fact anyway difficult in animals to assess chronic pain, because chronic pain is months and years after the injury. But there are models out now that try to picture more closely what we see in patients with a, for example, thoracotomy model.
Precisely. Yeah?
So of course we are trying to enhance our translational aspects. Yeah? And we see, in addition to that, limitations. So we did a study with a colleague of mine in Vienna, Manuela Schmidt, who is a proteomic expert, and we showed that if you do this incision in humans, volunteers, or in mice or in rodents, that the proteins that are affected and the pathways, the protein pathways, are merging a little bit in animals and humans, but there are differences as well.
Yeah.
So there are limitations to our animal
So
models.
Are we going to solve the problem of who has chronic pain after surgery within the next few years?
I hope so. And we have plans to do that. We are still already forming consortia, and we in fact work in a large consortium, IMI Pain Care, that just closed, ended this year, with many, many European and international people, not just for post-surgical pain, but one third of it was post-surgical pain, and we try to enhance study designs for doing exactly what you were asking for, developing and producing more studies. And it's now different to 25 years ago, where you were able to learn almost all the techniques yourself. Now, today, and I think this is fantastic, you have to collaborate with many other people to put your heads together, add different methods, and then produce.
And I guess that brings us back to where we are, right? Because
exactly.
that's what conferences
exactly.
do. It builds networking and research interest
exactly.
groups and all of that.
That's what EFIC is about.
Exactly.
As well. Yeah.
And so coming back to your work here this year, working as the chair of the scientific committee, you obviously have a very big hand and saying in what's really going on here. I know there was a topic for this year's conference. Would you explain that to us? Tell
yeah.
us what it was and explain it.
So the topic is personalized pain management, the future is now. And I have chosen this topic, and I was very happy to have the opportunity to choose a topic for this Congress that was already founded by my research 25 years ago. So in the future that is now, we have many, many informations from many researchers, patient initiatives, from many professionals, that you have a patient group, like let's talk about chronic neuropathic pain due to diabetes, for example, that the patients are coming in the clinic, but a treatment does not fit all patients with the same disease.
Yeah.
Even the phenotype of this patient, so how they talk about the symptoms, what symptoms they have, and what characteristics they present, is different. So it's obvious that personalized management of what they show us as a clinician needs to be inherent in our treatment approaches.
And I guess this individuality you were talking about also shows in the way that the group, the scientific group was built. As I recall it, there was a person with the lived experience of pain yep. in the group.
Yeah.
How did that, how do you work that about?
Yeah, so the people working with me, it was not me at all. It was a group of fantastic people from the scientific field, from the clinical field, many different disciplines again, and from the patient representatives or patient with lived experiences and advocates for these people that work together with professionals to form these scientific congress.
And just to sort of round up here, because I see that there's tons of things you need to do as well, what would your recommendations be? I mean, nobody has a better overview of the program than you, so what would be your recommendations? Or is there anything you're particularly proud of that is in the program for the people here?
So we have a couple of new things. One is that we included debates. So debates mean that there are not three frontal talks and then two or three questions answered at the end. It has a couple of talks, 5 minutes or maybe 10 if there are three, and then you have plenty of time to discuss with the audience and between the speakers the topics. So we have it in one room all the time. There is a debate. It's the room 5. So I would recommend to go into this room, enjoy debates about many different topics. And we have a plenary. This is tonight. The first plenary of EFIC is tonight at 5:15, which is debate as well. And we have top speakers, 5 plenarists there. They are so experienced with neuropathic pain, and they will talk about personalized pain management. Is this possible at the moment? So I would like to recommend going to these plenaries.
And we hope to have those people in the studio tomorrow.
It'll
be a bit crammed
so.
In, but we hope to have
hope
everyone
so.
Here and have
yeah.
a good discussion.
Yeah. This is something that is somehow an experiment, I can say. I'm looking forward to that, but on the other hand,
I guess if you have all these people who have all their careers and they're all having yeah. different perspectives
exactly.
and having
exactly.
a debate, which yeah. you know we refer to as an academic debate,
yeah.
so...
Yeah. But still, there are so many other things. We have plenarists on post-surgical pain, which is my heartbreaking topic as well. So Winfried Meisner and Rianne van Berkel will talk about post-surgical pain, physician and a nurse from different points of view, big data studies. We have many topics that are on top of what people are discussing today. Health literacy will be in. Topic EFIC is very
it's
important.
It's very easy to see that you're excited about the
yeah,
program.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Well, congratulations. It is a wonderful program.
Well, thank
and
you so
I,
much.
I wish you a good day.
Yeah, thank you. And I hope it goes well, not just well. I'm so excited and I hope everybody will enjoy
yeah.
it. Thank
well,
you so
what,
much.
What people back home can't see is that this is full of people coming by and standing, queuing and talking to each other. So it's already a success.
Thank you so much, Morten. Thanks for doing that here for the people who are not at the Congress.
It's our pleasure.